The joys of being outside in nature.
Josie, what are you doing out here?
Sorry, Maeve, you're Irish, so you don't understand about the British countryside.
This is the car park. Oh, gross. Is that urban fox vomit?
Fine. I don't know anything about being outside. I can't remember the last time I even thought about plants. I live in London with gold carts and the Docklands Light Railway. I don't need them. So I went to Kew Gardens with Colin, the producer of the show, as research. And do you know what I realised? There aren't enough little houses carved into the middle of trees. There really aren't, are there? Little hobbit houses. Later in the cafe, I remembered, coffee is a plant. No way. I'm not proud, but it is so easy to completely disconnect yourself from nature. I have moisturiser that smells of lavender and roses, but I never really see any of either. And in this country, people want to be disconnected. Like, they don't like meat that looks like meat. They want it to look like a smiley face and be called porksicles. Or people my age do. Older people seem to have a connection to the wildlife around them that is mystical and almost inexplicable to me. If you go out for a walk with a great aunt and there's a commotion in the bushes, she'll be able to say,
"Oh, there's a blue tit in the hollyhock."
And I think, how do you know that? How can you possibly know? What have they read? Who have they spoken to know it? How do you know that that flower is a bath rose? There isn't even a rose called that. I just had to think of one example of a flower or tree or any plant, and I didn't even know one. I want to be more like my grandma, who had a large, beautiful garden. Or to be like Dickon in The Secret Garden, little mice running up to me to give me berries and settle their planning disputes. Excuse me. What's that, brownie? No, that's his nest, not yours. I try, though. I take what I can get. The wall charts that have come free with certain newspapers have changed my life for the better. Just getting to know the names of the more sophisticated apples, like the jazz apple, who knew? I should say at this point, I do understand that is why they put the stickers on the apples, so that you can find out what breed of apple they are, who the growers are, where they're from, etc., etc. But I can't help but only see them as a free treat. Like, oh, look at that, it's a little sticker there. What a free embellishment for your existence that is. Like, oh, thanks. I'll stick that in my diary. If you put a line of them along your chest, it's like you're the veteran of a kind of fruit-based conflict.
How did you get that one, Colonel?
That one? That's golden delicious. That's the highest honour you can achieve in the field. I lost a lot of good men that day. Very bland fruit, that.
And the stickers on Granny Smith apples are a blue oval with white writing and a white border. That is the exact same style and design as the blue plaques that they put on the houses where notable people have lived or died. Come on! Well, I didn't know Granny Smith lived in this apple. Hang on. Well, I didn't know Granny Smith lived in my copy of Crime and Punishment, which I have read. Well, I've read half of it. He's done a crime. Do not tell me what happens next. I said he's done a crime. Don't tell me what happens next. Don't spoil the ending of Crime and Punishment by telling me what happens after the crime. The thing that struck me most about the names of apples is that some have full names, first names and surnames. Why not just dress them up in a hat and a cape if you're doing that? Good afternoon, Mr. Pearman. They're never going to get married or register to rent DVDs. They do not need surnames. But it wasn't just that they have full names. It's that they have the full names of people that I know. James Grieve and Charles Ross. They are the names of apples, right? But they're not. They're the names of people that I know. James Grieve runs a theatre company. I know him. He's a nice guy. And Charles Ross does the one-man Star Wars at the Edinburgh Fringe. I've met him. He's sweet, light, and reminiscent of pears. I want to live in a big, exciting city. But I don't think it's wrong to want it to be a bit more like a village. So when my grandma passed away and she wanted her family to take what they liked from her books, so many useful, instructive things from a lifetime of self-improvement, one of the things I took was The Armchair Book of the Garden by Dr. D.G. Hessian. It's from 1983 and on the cover are pictures of flowers. On the first page, there's a photograph of a man standing behind a woman on a chair. In case you didn't understand the armchair bit of the title.
the people don't feature again anywhere else in the book. This detail alone was enough to make me smitten, and Dr. Hessian is my kind of man.
First out, he's a doctor.
Exactly. And he says,
just for once, put down those practical gardening guides, sit back and enjoy this.
What I thought was going to be sedate and worthy was actually pretty exciting from the get-go. It's chock full of adventure botanists, and I am so in love with that lifestyle choice. The closest you can get to that now is called Stealing from the Garden Centre. John Tradescant and his son, John Tradescant, were already in my good books for starting up their own travelling museum, The Closet of Rarities.
Is that the one with Henry VIII's stirrups in it?
The very same.
No, it's my favourite.
Mine too. But better still, in 1621, John Tradescant Sr. hunted pirates along the Algerian coast. But as the book says,
the booty he brought back was not recaptured jewels, it was the apricot.
That's how we got the apricot. Vanquishing pirates. Amazing. And the apricot, it's such an unlikely candidate for being involved in anything like that. I mean, a pineapple I could understand, they're big and spiky, but an apricot, that's not even a peach. And do you know how we got the nectarine? Space wars. Adventure botanists were pioneers too. Like Robert Fortune, the first plant hunter ever allowed into China, despite the fact that he couldn't speak the language and he took an instant dislike to the people. Now that is classic British behaviour abroad. But more exciting, he was employed to be a tea spy, to learn Chinese brewing secrets and then smuggle tea into India. And he totally pulled it off by dressing up as a Chinese man, presumably one that looked disdainfully at everyone and couldn't talk. Who fell for that? Then I read and found out more about Capability Brown, the maverick who tore up formal gardens to make wild-looking landscapes, and his nemesis, Sir William Chambers, the stiff landscape architect, who said,
peasants emerge from the melon grounds to the periwig and turn professor.
What does that even mean, the melon grounds? His mum's in the melon grounds. What a snob. He's anti-self-improvement, he's anti-social mobility, and he has something against melons that I don't understand. I hate him. I don't think I fully realised until reading this book how much my ideas of nature and the countryside were based on Capability Brown. I think I'm out in the wilderness when every craggy hill has been meticulously landscaped and even the plots themselves aren't free from our intervention. We've cultivated those plants over centuries deliberately to make them look how we want them. None of it is as wholesome or as natural as I thought. Even Linnaeus, the father of plant classification, decided his system according to flower parts. That's basically perving at a plant's rude bits. If you don't believe me, his collection of notes is kept by the Linnaean Society of London. What a coincidence that they're called that and they have his collection of things. Before his system, those in place were confusing and many. Either they were too simple, like tree or shrub, or hopelessly complex, like the system of the botanist Jan Ramos, who divided them into A, trees he'd had a wee against, B, trees that made him want to vom up, and C, miscellaneous. And then Linnaeus added the final touch to his format by making everything more Latin-y. His name wasn't even Linnaeus, it was Carl Linner. Botanists, more than anyone else in history, love Latin. Making someone's name a bit more Latin-y was a sign of massive respect. When Linnaeus used Tradescantia as a name for the spider wart, it was a posthumous compliment to the fruit pirates, and not an insult, as it clearly seems. This reverence for Latin strikes a chord with me. My grandma taught herself. I've inherited that book as well. My mother knows it and regularly assumes that I know it and Greek and Old French as she does, giving me impossible linguistic quizzes by surprise in seemingly unrelated conversations.
And your sister's opening a salon. Now tell me, where does the word galaxy come from?
I don't know, Mum.
Yes, you do. Come on, think, Josie. Galacticos, the Greek word. Milk. Lactos, galacticos, milk. Isn't that interesting?
Yes, it is. So I bought myself another book, The Concise Dictionary of British Flora, just to learn new Latinate names and adjectives, like spathulate, meaning spatula-shaped, or pectinate, resembling the teeth of a comb. I like the lives that botanists have created for themselves, behaving like Indiana Jones and using words that make them sound like wizards. But reading it, the thing I was overcome by was page after page of relentless prettiness and colour. It made me want to make up my own garden. So I arranged for the head gardener at the Lord Branch Urban Sanctuary in Holloway to show me and Maeve around and give us some tips. It feels so good to finally be in a beautiful garden.
We're in a car park.
Oh.
Hello, are you two here for the tour?
Yes.
Very well, follow me.
To your left, you'll see some classic English flowers. Hairy bittercress, horiolicum, English scurvy grass, green hellebore, note the glabrous leaves beneath, the stinking hellebore.
She's a stinking hellebore.
I beg your pardon.
Nothing.
Good. The flixweed, heath milkwort, flexible naiad.
That sounds like a mythical lucky creature.
Oh, flexible naiad, grant us 5 wishes. Yes, I'll bend over backwards to grant you anything.
Brilliant.
Pignut, corky-fruited water drop wort, crack willow. Oh, shrubby cinquefoil and bur sherville.
Which ones are they?
No, lower class. Those aren't plants. They're friends of mine. Oh, shrubby bur, give me a moment.
Oh, I'm glad she's gone. That's a bit relentless. Maeve, what are you doing?
I'm putting a lupin into my mouth. It's the floral code. Flower language, like the gays have with bandanas.
What?
It means be my love.
Oh, God, what are you doing? You can't eat lupin seeds. They're poisonous. Spit it out. Now, come along to the west beds. There's bastard barn, raised knot grass, and then what would you rather? Branched broom rape or lesser broom rape?
What on earth? That garden terrified me. So I went back to my book, and it said,
a little garden, the littler the better, is your richest chance of happiness and success.
I don't need to grow plants with stupid names. I can grow fruit, like my heroes, the tradescants. What better way is there to make my city like a mini village than by growing your own? My stepdad got an allotment, and where there once was quite a frustrated man, now there's just lots of free aubergines. How can that be a bad thing? I think what I'm starting to understand is that this isn't about high art or intimidating high culture. It's about making things that are pleasant, making yourself good and understanding the world around you. It's hard for me not to canonise old people and old things, but that's making them too lifeless and pure. I remember when I was 17, my grandma told me a joke about sex. It completely blew my mind and I didn't know where to look. The punchline was,
how else do you make it last 5 minutes?
But that doesn't mean I think that all old people are like Michael Winner. Or that I don't think we should idolise them. When you're young, it's your duty to catch up with the things that are long-standing and worthwhile. And older people are the ones who can most help you. As an overawed young optimist looking for things to respect, I want what is important to know and wonderful to experience. I want things that make you shut up and sit still. Old people just want a sit down in the quiet. So me and my grandma met in the middle quite well. For my 19th birthday, she gave me a mixtape she'd made for me of classical music, because there is nothing wrong with being aspirational. And when moving house, I found it again and put it on. What I heard floored me. It was this.
Hello, Josie. This is Grandma. I'm making this tape for you for your 19th birthday of music that I hope you will find very relaxing. In the meantime, remember that we all love you very much, and you're going to do absolutely fine whatever you're doing, unless it's getting drunk, in which case stop it immediately. God bless.
And I swear this is true. On a country walk at the weekend, I saw a wood pigeon flying up out of a tree, and I said, oh, there's a wood pigeon. And my friend said, you're so country, how do you know that? And I felt old and good.
All of the Planet's Wonders, shown in detail, was written by and starred Josie Long, with Maeve Higgins and Izzy Sooty. It was produced by Colin Anderson.